your life, Richard, and your life, listener, is a precious, priceless gift. Got it? You got one job. Say yes to being used for good. Watch what happens next.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get a million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and I am beyond honored to bring back John O'Leary, our guest today, for the third time. I wouldn't say third time's a charm because one and two were unbelievable. But in 1987, John O'Leary, just a curious nine-year-old boy, playing with fire and gasoline, John created a massive explosion in his home and was burned on 100% of his body. He was given less than a 1% chance to survive. Spoiler alert, John survived because he's with us today. But today, he inspires tens of thousands of people at live and virtual events each and every year. He partners with companies and organizations across fields such as sales, healthcare, safety, marketing, finance, faith, education, and insurance. He's also a two-time best-selling author of On Fire, The Seven Choices That Will Ignite a Radically Inspired Life. We actually talked about that way back on episode 75. And In Awe, Rediscover Your Childlike Wonder to Unleash Inspiration, Meeting, and Joy. Those were episodes 153 and 154, which we will have in the links down below. And John's award-winning Live Inspired podcast has more than 7 million downloads and enjoys world-class guests such as Brené Brown, Mitch Albom, Jackie Joyner-Kersee, and Bob Costas. His story is now taking on a new form, a full-length feature film starring Joel Courtney, John Corbett, and William H. Macy. Soul on Fire will release in theaters nationwide this coming Friday. John O'Leary, man, it is so good to have you back on the Daily Helping. Welcome back to the show.
Man, let me say it like this. When I get requests to do podcasts, we can't say yes to all of them. There's just enough going on right now. We can't. But when your name popped up, immediately I'm like, there's my friend. I'm going to make this happen. So your long introduction of me could be more succinctly said, I'm a dad, I'm a husband, I'm a son, I'm grateful, I'm your friend, and I'm honored to be part of this program.
Well, I would say without question that our previous two conversations were amongst my favorite in the 400 plus episodes that I've done and have been blessed to do over this run. And I don't have any doubt this will be the same. And you humble and honor me with your words. So I want to do things a little differently with this third go around, because on Apple Podcast or, you know, YouTube Podcast, we'll have the links to those episodes in the show notes. So I don't want to really spend a ton of time talking about the story itself, other than let's do the high-level overview. I kind of spoiled that you survived, right? So we know that.
I don't even know why people are listening anymore. I mean, they know how the thing ends. Let's move on to the next episode.
We knew you basically blew yourself up in the garage, but I know that your family had such a huge role in your journey and your recovery. So talk to us a bit about the aftermath, and then I want to really kind of dive deep into the movie.
Let me tell you about the far, far aftermath. So last night, as you and I are recording this, I had three different texts from three different siblings who live in three different cities, all of them asking how they can rent out theaters for this weekend. And so, like, you may be saying, well, that's nice of them, but I don't think it's nice of them. I think it shows you their character and their generosity and the fact that when a film comes out about their brother's life, rather than them saying, well, good for him, or, oh, there's John again, they celebrate it and they get behind it and they push it forward. And that's who they are today. I get emotional thinking about it because they could have been so resentful after what I put them through, after the fact that my mom and dad stepped away from their roles as mom and dads for about a year as they guided me through recovery. But my siblings today are my biggest champions, and I'm wild about them. So that's them today. Who were they way back then? Well, when I was 9, as you alluded to, I was in a house fire, and my brother Jim heard the explosion. He's 17. I'm a kid. I'm screaming for help. And when I'm screaming for help, I'm praying for a savior. It wasn't Jim that I was praying for. You know, he'd never done anything, Dr. Richard, beneficial to me at that point in my entire life. And yet this is the moment he changed. He picked up a rug. He beat down the flames, carried me outside, burned himself in the process, saved my life. And after doing that, he raced back into a burning house, chased all the girls, chased the dog out, calls 911. And a long story made far shorter, 1987, the lifesaver of the year for Missouri was not a first responder or a physician or a leader of any variety other than some 17-year-old high school kid who heard screams, saw a sibling burning, and rather than running from it, raced toward it. So that is my brother in a nutshell. That's who he is today. That's who my sisters are. They were so for me as a kid going through these burns and through that recovery. And 38 years later, they're still for me. I love my siblings, man. I'm so blessed to have been raised in a family of origin and still to be part of their orbit today.
I think it's so incredible because, you know, again, this happened to you. This didn't happen to you in your 20s. This happened at the age of 9. And I know what a 9-year-old was focused on in 87, right? They're focused on Thundercats and G.I. Joe and, you know, baseball and yeah, you know, and so you probably wouldn't have been able to process at the age of 9 how large of an impact that you would have on people's lives. But I wonder for you now, especially with Soul on Fire, you know, about to be in theaters, and at what point did the light bulb go off in your head to know that you would be helping people and that you felt it a responsibility to share what happened with you and inspire others to live their best lives? When did that kind of all come together for you?
So in some regards, that's two separate questions, and I'll answer the first one first and then the second one.
Okay.
Before you hit record, you shared with me the impact of the story in your life. And as you were talking, I just had to look away from the screen because, man, that's not me. Like, I didn't do a thing, you know? So I still feel not unworthy, but overwhelmed when people come up to me and they share that somehow something that was said or done or lived out or a book they read or whatever it was moved them to do something different in their life than they were doing beforehand. That blows me away. But I'm humbly aware that it happens. That's why we keep doing it. That's why we say yes to the podcast and yes to the books and yes to the speeches and even ultimately yes to the film. None of it is about self-glorification. It's trying to remind people that God still works through all things, that your life matters, and that your best is yet to come. And if there's something I can write or say or promote that does that for you, I'm all in. I'm all in. So that's part of it. You also asked about the origin story of, well, when did that begin? And, you know, Dr. Schuster, you know this. Like, when I was burned, my dream in life was not one day to be a speaker or a radio show host or a podcast host or a movie star. My dream was to be normal. And so I pursued that. I lived into that very well for about 20 years. I hid the scars. I hid the brokenness. I hid the story. And as you know from your work, but that also means you hit the light. And you just hit the light. And so my story changed. And I know we come in from all faith backgrounds, but here's where mine changed. I changed in the back of a church service. I didn't want to be there. I was hungover from the night before, my arms were crossed, and I was bored by not just the message, but by my life. So that's where I am. I'm 28 and I'm dead. And I hear the pastor say, and he's talking about the gift of talents, like multiply. The call in life is to multiply, regardless of how many you think you got. But then he said, and for those of you who feel like you got no talent, and that's me, he said, listen to me. Your life is a precious, priceless gift. You got one job, say yes to being used for good. And I went home that day and I wrote it down in my journal, say yes to being used for good. So this is how the story works. But the following day, I'm working construction in St. Louis. For your listeners, man, I don't have fingers. I'm burned from my neck to my toes. I got no business in carpentry, but that's what I'm doing. I think I'm trying to prove to the world that I'm worthy. It's all about like, it's not about recognizing your value. It's trying to prove your value to others. So that's what I'm doing in my life. And then my phone rings, literally and figuratively. I answer it and a little girl says, "Mr. John, will you speak at my school?" My first question was, about what? I mean, seriously, about what? And she says, "Well, I heard you were burned when you were about my age. Would you share that story?" And had I not received the message the day before that my life was a precious gift and that I should say yes to being used for good, there is no way I would have said yes. But I uttered back the word yes, spoke to that group of Girl Scouts for 5 minutes. That's my first keynote. Stumbled out of that room feeling like a failure. But one of the dads pulled me aside and said, "John, that was terrific. Would you speak at my Rotary Club?" And dude, like at this point, I'm learning the reps now. The response to the opportunity of serving is yes. So I said, "Yeah, I'll do that." And in that room, there was someone from Qantas. In that room, there was someone from a Chamber of Commerce. I'd never even heard of these things, man. Chamber of Commerce. In that room, there was someone who ran the prison system for Kansas. And this awkward, introverted nobody with no fingers and scars and brokenness all over his life just kept saying yes to being used for good. And what that led to over 20 years was 2,700 speeches, 2 best-selling books, audiences in 50 states, dozens of countries, most recently a full feature film coming out about this story. And the best part of it all in my mind is none of it has to do with me. It has to do with the heroes who showed up, what they did, what they taught, what it meant for me, but far more importantly, Dr. Richard, what it means for others. So all of the work today isn't about me. It's about, gosh, man, your life, Richard, and your life, listener, is a precious, priceless gift. Got it? You got one job. Say yes to being used for good. Watch what happens next.
We could drop the mic there and end, but because it's so succinct and beautifully said. But I'm so excited about the movie. So I always ask authors, right? Why did you write this book and why now? So I want to kind of ask you a similar thing because, you know, your story has been very well known for a very long time. How did this all come together with the movie? And, you know, was there a part of you initially like, I don't know, a movie, is it right? You know, did you wrestle with any of it? Or was it like, yeah, let's do the movie? Because I know it's not about the money for you. I know it's all about the impact, right? So.
Hey, guys. Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go.
Well, the good news is I make no money on the movie. So if anyone's like, how rich is this bro? Poor and poorer every day as we pour into this film because we believe in the power of its impact. So, man, again, last night as I'm going to bed, this is the week it's coming out. I don't sleep well because I don't like the bright light still. And I don't know what that is. It's, you know, someone smarter than I can unpack what's really going on there, but I don't desire the bright light and it can't get much brighter than Hollywood. So this is an awkward tension. So where did it come from and how did it come to reality? Back in 2017, I was speaking at a conference in Vegas and a lady named Linda approached me afterwards and said, "John, have you ever thought about turning your story into a film?" So I said, "No." So she said, "Could I try?" And it goes back to that pastor a decade earlier, man, like the response is yes. So I said, "Yeah, Linda, you could try." So she tried. She raised a little bit of seed capital. They wrote a script. Then it shows up in my life and I recognize, well, dude, if this is going to happen, I want it to be real and good and impactful. So I got into that. Then they had to elevate it from there. It needed a director. So they brought it out to a guy named Sean McNamara in Hollywood, California. And I'm a Midwest guy. And this might offend some of your listeners and viewers. I don't trust Hollywood, man. That's not my world. So I flew out there to meet with this guy, this big Hollywood director. He directed Reagan last summer, Soul Surfer, Spare Parts, Cutting Edge. Like, this guy's all over the place, man. So I wanted to find out what guides his work. Where's his heart? So I flew out there. We had a coffee. And finally, I just said, man, straight up, like, why do you want to do this? And this big time Hollywood director just started crying. And he talked about, he does real life stories to remind people that their life has value. So I'm like, well, dude, a guy who can cry in front of me in California sipping on coffee is the kind of guy I can grab onto and say, well, let's go do it. So Sean steps into this project. We raise some seed capital. We start attracting the actors. My job, and that was, first of all, to help out, figure out who it ought to be, but more than that, to reach out to them. And in each of the requests, I said to them, like, hey, William H. Macy, you know, from Fargo, and you're Frank, and, you know, you're all these big roles. I said, I want you to step into the role of a guy named Jack Buck. He saved my life as a radio announcer, man, in mighty ways. And I told the story, and I said, you're the hero of Soul on Fire. Will you say yes to this? And he did. And I did the same for every single actor in the film, except for the guy who plays me. So I reached out to Joel Courtney, and I said, Joel, good news, bad news. The film is packed with heroes, man. Oh, man, they're awesome. The bad news is you're not one of them. But through their love and through their grace and through their kindness, by the very, very, very end of the film, you begin to recognize the dignity of your life and the ability that it has to impact others positively. Will you say yes to that role? And Joel did, which is awesome. So we had this great cast of folks who've been in everything out in Hollywood. They all flew to St. Louis to be part of it. I grew up and was burned in St. Louis, raised my kids in St. Louis. They filmed in all the spots that were part of my story. So the scenes you watch that are in little John O'Leary's house were actually filmed in the house where I was burned. The screen porch where my dad eventually has this courageous conversation with me about why he's grateful for Parkinson's in life was filmed on the screen porch where he had that very same conversation with me. The place where I met my wife at the clock tower at St. Louis University, they filmed there. The hospital scenes are filmed there. The church where Beth and I were married, well, that's where they filmed. All the actors you see in the room, that church, they're not actors. Those are my friends and aunts and uncles and best friends and family and uncles. And final thing I'll say around this, that in that scene, when you watch it, there's a like they call it a dolly shot. So they roll the camera along and they show the beautiful bride and then the groom and then his mom and dad, these heroes that you now fall in love with, right behind his mom and dad. Whew, I got emotional, man, are my actual parents. So the grandparents in the film are actually John's parents. And why I'm so moved is twofold. Number one, my dad has Parkinson's. He's my hero. And when Sean McNamara yelled out the word action and the church stands, my dad had not stood in 10 years. But when he said action, dude, my awesome warrior dad stands up. And so when you watch this film and you see this old grandpa-y guy stand up, dude, that's my hero. That's my guy right there. That's my dad standing up when he cannot. So that's crazy. And maybe even more crazy is this film is rolling out, as you know, man, this week. October 10th is when it goes live. We knew my dad would be there for it, but there was an opportunity to bring my dad in May. One of the clients wanted to bring in 3,000 other people. So they wanted to check out the film ahead of time. And at the last minute, I just called my mom and I'm like, hey, mom, what are you doing this afternoon? Want to watch the film? So she's like, oh, absolutely. So she gets dad into the wheelchair, rolls him into the theater. He holds my hand the entire time, which is normal. And it's almost boring when you have a hand to hold. It's very easy to take that for granted. At the end of the film, people are clapping. And I lean over to my dad and I say, Dad, what do you think about your film, man? And he goes, he's got no voice. He goes, what a gift. He whispered out, what a gift. And I think to him, it was like a life review, a reminder that all he endured, not just Parkinson's, because we celebrate that with that being redeemed, but also burns and house fires and struggles and marriage and finances and everything else, all of it. At the end of the end, watch the movie, it's a gift. So why is that so meaningful to me today? Because 2 days after that, my dad started coughing. A couple days after that, he became bedridden. And his last words to me, this side of eternity, were spoken in a movie theater. What a gift. So my dad died on May 30th. And I mean, when you see the film, you'll see that it ends, first of all, with the real pictures of the real people. So you'll recognize this isn't a lightly, loosely based on a true story. Dude, this happened. It happened. The girl walking down the aisles wearing my wife's wedding dress. This thing happened. It's crazy. So that's wild. But it's now dedicated to the hero who informs my work still, my father. He spent a couple decades unable to move, unable to speak, but his last words to me happened in the theater, celebrating his life. And the words were, "Richard, what a gift." My hope when people leave this film is they don't leave thinking, "Well, John O'Leary's a stud, man. What a fighter. 9 years old, burned, and somehow pulls through. What a tough kid. And then he ends up with the pretty girl in the end. Like, oh, God, what a Hollywood story." That's not the goal. The goal is when you leave, you are convicted that your life is a gift, that it can be used for good, that in small and in mighty ways, and neither of them are more important than the other, but in small and in mighty ways, you can positively influence other lives for good.
There's so much to unpack there. The bit about your dad, my God, that's unbelievable. And how incredible he got to be there with you. The words he said to you, I imagine for him, it was kind of like a this is your life moment, right? Where he got to see, because I imagine as a parent going through that, he didn't know what to do in a lot of ways, right? Because there's not a book, right? Like wound care for a 9-year-old child who should be dead for dummies, right? That book doesn't exist.
It's got one reader. It's my dad. And
right. So for him, how gratifying to see all of the sacrifices that he and your mother made, all of the choices, all played back on the screen. And now he gets to know that those choices he made are going to help so many people all over this planet. I mean, just unbelievable. And you talk about, you know, your hope for this movie. And again, so in line with who I know you are, that it's not about John O'Leary. It's never about John O'Leary. It's about everybody else. And so, you know, your hope for this is that people walk out of the theater believing that they can make a small difference in the lives of others. And I love that. I mean, it's the core premise of the show, basically, right? Do kind things for other people and you are a better person because of it. That's my mission. And I know your mission is very similarly aligned. What would you say to somebody, the cynic, right, who watches your movie and says, well, that's a great story. That's a one-off, but you know, the world is ugly and I hate that political party X and there's war here and the economy, you know, this and that and all the, you know, litany of excuses as to why this movie or any movie for that matter isn't going to be able to change somebody's life. What would you say to that person?
I would say they're right. It's a waste of their time. It was a waste of our effort. It was a waste of our money. It was a waste of the actors spending time away from their families. It was all stupid. It was just, you know, what a fool's errand. So that person is completely right. And I would say to the person that says, maybe this is a reminder that my life can be used for good. Maybe this is a reminder that Hollywood's not all bad. Maybe this is a reminder that miracles still happen. Maybe this is a reminder that, yeah, the film celebrates a Hall of Fame radio announcer named Jack Buck, but in equal measure celebrates a janitor named Lavelle. In equal measure, it celebrates what real love looks like. And it's not glorified. It's just celebrated humbly. It's a beautiful brunette named Beth who's able to kiss the scars of a broken boyfriend, man. Like, who does that? It celebrates the best among us. And so right now, to the cynic who you asked about, I would say, dude, I'm sorry we wasted your time. And you go back to the gate. Maybe you'll get your $12 back. I hope they give it to you. But to the others, and I hope they're the ones listening to your show because they're the ones I'm focused on. I don't really care about the media. I don't watch it. What you focus on grows. I'm sick of hearing about all the stuff that's bad. I'd far rather focus on the people who are responding to it, who are putting out the flames, who are making a difference in their own way, regardless of their political affiliation. I don't care. That's never going to save you anyway. I was no better under Trump or Biden or Trump or Obama or Bush or Clinton. I mean, take me through. When was your life better under them? It won't be. It's a lie. It's a grand lie that we keep telling ourselves. They will make me better. My friend Dave Ramsey says, stop worrying about the White House. Start worrying more about your house. Start worrying about that. This film is a reminder that you have agency, that your life still matters, that the world is still filled with good, and that the little things you do never are. one of the cool scenes, and you know, I recognize some of your listeners won't go, and hopefully, God willing, a lot of them will. So for those who do, you'll see this scene. Others, here comes the movie near the end. So not at the very end. The very end is this crazy, powerful rap that you will not see coming. But right before that, there's a little recall where John is talking to a friend. We'll leave it vague, about how he finally recognizes all the people who showed up in his life. And there's this overlap. It's a playback of the heroes who showed up in his journey for him. And it is a reminder to the viewer and to your listeners that the things that you do for others are never wasted. And if that's in like a self-help book, you know, about throwing crabs back into the water, and you know, it matters for this one, throw that starfish back in. Well, okay. But what if it actually happened? And what if it, at the end of the film, it locks up the images of the actors with the actual heroes that they portrayed? And then what if you could imagine yourself being one of those heroes? As a dad, as an uncle, as an auntie, as a neighbor, as a nurse, as a custodial staff member, as a girlfriend, as a husband, pick your job title. But what if you see yourself in that film as being part of someone else's recovery, someone else's life? I promise you, when you do that, you will walk out, number one, knowing that it is a gift. Dad's right. Great final words, man. What a gift. But it will change two lives, not only the one you are serving, but your own.
You may have just done this, but I ask anyway, and as you know, you've done this twice. Now this is your third shot at this. I wrap up every episode by asking my guests just this one single question, and that is, what is your biggest helping, that one most important piece of information you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our conversation today?
And I don't remember what I've shared in the past, so here comes the one that's moving me today. My mom and dad, they had a great marriage. They dated for 64 years all in. They raised six kids, a couple dogs. Good life, man. We had a great life growing up. And then at age 9, I burned down the house and it got hard. And then we rebuilt. And then little John's life slowly begins to rebuild. And then dad gets Parkinson's disease. And then he loses his job and he loses his freedoms and loses his wealth and loses everything he thought his life would become. And then they had a second house fire. And everything that they still had was then washed away. And then they rebuilt that house again. That's the house that they filmed this movie in, this house that has been burnt down twice, man, if you can imagine. Throughout it all, every single time, though, my mom kept rebuilding the kitchen in the same manner with the same sign hanging up on the wall. And the sign she hangs even into this day is this: "This too shall pass." And when we were kids running around with a dad who used to wear a suit and drive a nice car off to work, I think it was her reminder to her husband and to herself and to her six kids, "Hey, dude, don't take this for granted." When that boy, her husband, came home, shed the tie, shed the suit, and started wearing pajamas all day long, it was also a reminder, "This too shall pass." And it's a wonderful reminder to me that whether we are on top of the world or beat down by it, that this moment is passing and we can curse it. That's one way to view it. Or as my mom and dad taught through their lives, seldom through their words, usually just through their model, the gift of celebrating this moment, because this too shall pass. And so the reason it's very hard to get a big head about Hollywood when you recognize it's just a moment, man. It's fading so quick. I've seen the glitter fade, but it's also a great way to remind me when my life is hard. And by the way, guess what? Most days it is, that this too shall pass. I believe the foundation is firm. This moment will pass and the best is yet to come. So for me, that's so grounding and so liberating. And I hope your listeners recognize that whatever they're going through, whether they're grabbing the trophies right now and high-fiving the boss, or they are the boss, or the world has buried them, this moment's just a moment. It will pass and your best is yet to come.
So well said, John. I love that. The movie is Soul on Fire in theaters nationwide this coming Friday. But John, tell us where people can go online and get themselves some tickets.
Awesome. And thank you, man. Like, I hope you do. Hollywood's a democracy. And we've been voting for a long time that we want more examples of guys dressed as animals, like bats, as men wearing tidy readies all day long and flying through there like Superman, of cars that turn into robots, of squirrels that hold laser beams and curse. And guess what they give us more of? That stuff. Let's vote differently. Let's vote with this story of hope and courage and love and faithfulness and tenderness and celebration of family, overcoming, agency, and what happens ultimately in life when we fight for something bigger than ourselves. It is a hero's story. You will leave this uttering the words, what a gift, I promise, what a gift. And part of my hope is that we create such a ripple effect that Hollywood recognizes they've been making the wrong kind of films for too long. So where you can help us move that needle is go to soulonfiremovie.com, soulonfiremovie.com. You can watch the trailer. If it moves you, awesome. You can get tickets. You'll type in your city, wherever that is. It'll tell you where your nearest theater is. You can click on the theater, you know, move around, pick your seat, get the front row, get the popcorn. I'll be next to you. But it's a cool way not only to inspire you and the families that you might bring in with you or your coworkers, the folks you worship with, but to yell back out to Hollywood, this is what we want, man. We want to be inspired. We want messages that are life-giving. We want to be reminded that our lives can be used for good. We want to silence the critics that say, yeah, it's all bad. It's all fires, man. This is not a story of fires. This is a story of heroes. So go to soulonfiremovie.com, get your tickets, bring your friends, and be inspired.
Amazing. And for those of you at the car or in the car at the gym, we got you covered. Everything John O'Leary, including links to buy tickets for Soul on Fire, we got you in the show notes at drrichardschuster.com. Well, John, as ever, thank you so much for joining us today. You never disappoint, and I am grateful to call you my friend.
Well, my friend, I told you when your ass came in, it rose to the top. So thanks for being my buddy. Thanks for supporting our work. Sorry to be so fired up today, man. But you got me talking about my dad and my mom and my family and the world and cynicism. And it is time to silence that, not only on the outside, but even on podcasts like this and the two guys having the conversation. It's sometimes us. So we need to clamp down on that and pivot into the areas that we can control and improve.
Absolutely.
I'm grateful for you, man.
Thank you for that. I love that. And to each and every one of you who took time out of your day to listen to this conversation, thank you as well. If you're inspired, if you're going to go get yourself some movie tickets, go give us a follow and a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice, because this is what helps other people find the show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post it in your social media feeds using the hashtag #MyDailyHelping, because the happiest people are those that help others.